Yes, recording in progress. I'm in. Hello, everyone, and welcome to You Should See the Other Guy, the podcast where we talk about fictional characters who do a poor job of choosing their own love interests, and we feel that they could do much better for themselves if they would take our advice. I'm Jennifer.
I'm Samantha.
And I'm Sadie.
And today we have a very special guest from my place of employ, Juan Velasquez, the editorial business manager at Them and a musician and a music writer. Hello.
Hi. Hi, everybody. This is me. I'm Juan.
Juan, I feel like I just saw you.
Yeah, I guess you kind of did. We just hung out a little while ago.
I Slack with Juan most days. Well, the days that I don't Slack with you, they feel empty. Juan, you are truly the heart and soul of them.us.
Oh, it's so sweet. So sweet. Thank you, Samantha. I agree. A day without Slacking, is it even a day at all? I don't know if I agree. So thanks for having me.
And Juan, tell me a bit about your secret life as a musician, because despite hanging out with you, I know very little about your musical prowess and fame in the Los Angeles area.
Oh my gosh. I was in this like little touring indie rock band called Abe Vigoda in the 2000s. I did that all of my 20s, and I got to tour the world, and it was really awesome. I play guitar. And now I kind of play in a different band. We just kind of play locally so far. We're called Cupid and Psyche, and I play guitar still. And I've just kind of been in bands since I was maybe 19, and I'm 36 now. So it's been a while, but that's about it.
Oh my God.
Is it true what they say about lead singers?
Wait, what do they say about lead singers?
That's for you to tell
they're
us.
They're the most like dramatic in the group.
No, that's true. They're definitely the moodiest. But I'm not a lead singer. I cannot sing at all. I'm actually horrible. So I'm actually like, more, I kind of do like what I do for them.us in my bands. I'm sort of like, I end up kind of being the de facto business guy, which is very funny.
You're like one of those like very artistic, creative people who's been also cursed with a head for numbers. And so all the other artistic, creative people around you are like, you're going to do the spreadsheets now.
It's a combo of that and just like being the most like paranoid of things not going right and the most anxious and kind of taking over. So it's a combination of that and me kind of just taking control.
Did we lose Jen?
Oh no.
I'm in and out. I'm catching every three words or so.
Okay. Jen, maybe start a local if you haven't yet, and we'll just press on. Yeah, so we're going to talk about a movie all of us have seen and I think enjoyed and that Juan and I have talked about professionally for yes. them.u.s. There's no second dot there. I don't know why I said that. Which is Bros.
Woo!
Ooh, I have been so excited to talk about this movie on this podcast and like permanently put my thoughts out there. I have so many. I saw it twice. With very different people. So I'm excited to pick your brain since you've actually written about it professionally for them.u.s.
Sadie, do you think you can pull off the 60-second summary that you've installed as our benchmark?
Yeah. Remind me what Billy Eichner's love interest's name is. I feel like I only know him as...
Aaron.
Okay. I kept thinking Alex. And I was like, that just doesn't seem, I don't know. It seems too straight. Okay. So Billy Eichner plays Bobby. He is a podcaster, general I don't know. He does a lot of things. And he's also opening the first LGBTQ museum, and he is in his 40s. He's never really had a he's never had a serious relationship. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think he's ever had a like capital R relationship. He just has, like, casual hookups and goes to parties and is generally very anti-love and commitment. So very classic rom-com material we have on our hands. And he's at a bar and he meets Aaron, played by Luke McFarlane. And he is kind of a, like, how do I describe him? He works as like a will person. He like does a very kind of depressing job where he organizes people's wills for them. And he is a jock type person. He's very buff, just very generally not the type of person who's into Bobby a lot of the time. And so they get off on kind of a very fascinating start where like Bobby tries to kiss him. He's not really into it. And it very quickly becomes apparent that they each suffer from kind of their own form of commitment phobia. Whereas Bobby is very much like just very casual Tinder hookups, keep it chill, you know, all of that, goes home and watches like a Nora Ephron movie, and like complains all the time on his podcast, which is very similar to what I do in that respect. And then we have Aaron, who is much more comfortable doing like group sex and orgies than he is like having an actual capital R relationship. So they go through this kind of ebb and flow of their relationship. There's also a guy from Aaron's past named Josh. And wait, is it Jake or Josh? I can't remember.
Now I'm stuck.
I think it's Josh.
Josh.
Okay. Of course it's Josh. Anyway, there's Josh, who is someone that he had a crush on when he was in high school in their hockey team. And he later comes out as gay, and it kind of creates this weird rift in his relationship with Bobby. And then that kind of culminates to, you know, they've kind of reached this period where they're kind of dating, question mark, like they're kind of starting to get comfortable with each other. But then they meet back up with Josh, and then Aaron is like, we should have a threesome. And so they do. And then Bobby's like, I feel uncomfortable. And it all just snowballs from there. Aaron's family comes. He tells Bobby not to be himself. Bobby is like, fuck that. And he's like himself times 10. Aaron gets very mad at him. They break up. Things are going on in the LGBTQ museum world of this movie, but eventually they get it open, and then Aaron comes and Bobby sings him a song, and then they end up kissing and they're very much in love. The end. Did I miss anything substantial from this plot, from this summary?
I think the Hall of Animatronic Bisexuals was probably a critical plot point. Absolutely. Essential to understanding the events. No, Sadie, masterfully done.
Thank you.
I know you don't want to hear praise from me, but, you know, also the lag is weirding me out because it is bad. So I feel very awkward after I say anything to you for about 5 seconds.
The lag is bad for me? Even though I'm controlling it?
Unfortunately, yes.
Wow.
I don't know why. Sometimes internets just don't play along well with each other. Sometimes my internet is always used to being with other kinds of internet and doesn't know what to do when it's with your kind of internet. I'm trying to make the metaphor work and failing here. What did we think of Bros? Let's start with our guest. Juan, what did you think of Bros?
Oh my gosh. I actually really enjoyed it. I went with my friend Bethany, and she is a straight woman, and we both went in where she's kind of like, you know, one of my best friends. So it was like really fun to go see rom-coms with her in general. We'll watch like any kind of rom-com together. So it was fun to see this one together because I kind of had been anticipating it. I do like Billy. I love Billy on the Street. So I was like, I think he's pretty funny. So I was like, okay, it's going to be really good. But you know, there was like a little trepidation about like, oh, like, you know, as we talked about in our article about like, you know, all the marketing about it, how it's so important. But I enjoyed it in and of itself as a rom-com. I thought it hit the points like really well. And there were so many like really good niche jokes. And I found it to be extra like, there was points where I was a little uncomfortable just because I'm 36 and also never had a capital R relationship. And definitely am in two bros of all kinds, and sometimes I feel very much like Billy, where I'm like, oh, they're not gonna like me, like, what, why do I like them, if, you know, it's like that whole thing. So it kind of touched home for me a little bit, so it was kind of nice in that way, because in most rom-coms, like, I can always root for someone or root for the couple or whatever, but feeling pretty closely tied to like the situation, it felt a little more, I don't know. I was like, I got a little more out of it than just like basic kind of rom-com, you know, excitement that I get from watching, you know, any of them. So yeah, that's kind of how I felt about it on, you know, just broad strokes.
So when Billy, did the little, speech on the Adirondack chair, were you sitting there a single tear streaming down your eye being like, this is representation?
It wasn't, honestly, that part, okay, I did like that part, but that was the part that felt really like, I mean, I'm already like wrapped up in the movie and stuff, but it was a little like, that felt a little heavy-handed. But yeah, there, you know, it's one of those things where like maybe I was a little uncomfortable because it did resonate, but I didn't single tear cry. I'm sorry to tell you that. Yeah, I did, but it did resonate. You know, I feel like not even just me, but I think maybe other people with like different queer experiences can like relate to that, or just people who in general feel a little bit like they're too much in certain ways or don't fit in certain ways. So I think there was that like message underneath all of it that was like, not to be like super sappy, but it was like, you know, it is like, it's nice to hear, you know, in a movie that's like also filled with like kind of funny throwaway like poppers jokes and stuff like that. So yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was an Apatow produced movie, and usually I'm sort of like not into the Apatow movies. Like, I weirdly tried to watch This Is 40 the other day, and I was like, what is this? Oh. This has no plot. It's just a collection of like gags and people who are friends with Judd Apatow. But I felt like this very successfully navigated being both like emotional and also kind of like raunchy over the top. Like, it struck that balance better than any classic Apatow era version of this in my memory.
Oh, absolutely. I feel like as someone who is in general allergic to Apatow movies, I feel like I've definitely seen raunchier rom-coms than this, but they're never tasteful. Like tasteful is maybe the wrong word, but like I didn't feel like it detracted or it was like trying to make fun of sex. And like, I don't know, I feel like a lot of those older Apatow movies like Knocked Up are very, it makes you feel like weird and uncomfortable. I mean, there were parts where I was a little like inching out of my seat, because the first time I saw this, I did see it with my 65-year-old mother and my 64-year-old uncle, which was wild. So like the part where he was sucking on someone's feet and I was just slurping my icy in just trying to astrally project out of the theater as my mom and my uncle looked on in stony silence. But, God, yeah, I may I share my thoughts of this movie, having seen it twice, but once with my mom.
Please do.
And then once with an actual queer person my age. I found it very, very funny. Like, it's been a long time since I've laughed that many times during a rom-com. And I feel like I say this every time we stumble upon an actual funny rom-com. Like, usually they're like, haha, funny. You know, like there's some, I feel like the best rom-coms, like When Harry Met Sally or, you know, Four Weddings and a Funeral, like they're funny, but they're not like I'm dying in the theater. And there were so many like jokes made for queer people by queer people in this movie that just landed. With that being said, I was not sold on Aaron in the slightest. And maybe that's my controversial opinion on this podcast. I felt like Bobby could do better. I didn't trust his ass. And that's what I'll say.
Jen, how about you? What did you make of Bros?
Okay. I hope that you all can hear me. I'm hovering around the fringes of this podcast like a ghost and recording myself as backup in case my thoughts are not recorded here. But I am really glad that you all waited for me to come back from visiting home to record this episode, because I probably would not have gone to see Bros in theaters otherwise and would have waited however long it takes to come out on streaming before I saw it. And I absolutely loved it. Echoing everything that I could make out that all of you were saying about the humor, and I saw like the term Efron-esque, like bandied about a bit online to discuss the dialogue. And yeah, it was just funny. And, all of the dialogue and the relationships were very well established between the characters based on how they spoke to each other. And I loved it. And yes, and the whole, you know, I thought that that was just a great plot for a rom-com of any sort. Like, this works so well as a specific niche movie for queer people to enjoy. But the theme about being too much, you know, sort of the specific of Bobby Billy Eichner's experience here is sort of universal in the feeling there. And the so I will disagree with Sadie a little bit. I don't know. I'm torn. Because
it's fine.
Yes, I actually am with you. I'm not going to argue for a happily ever after forever and ever for Bobby and Aaron. Just can't see it, even though, you know, I want to. They need to reassess in 3 months, exactly like they said at the end of the movie. Because if Aaron really does want kids, you know, I think that maybe he will end up back settling down with Josh in his hometown eventually, upstate New York.
Yeah, they can go be Instagram husbands upstate, you know, matching stockings, like...
There were so many
picking or whatever people do.
That took me out. I was actually trying. I tried to get my mom to go see it with me, but I warned her after hearing Sadie's account of watching it with her uncle that I thought it would be best to warn mom that there were sex scenes in the movie. And at that point she said, "Honey, I never want to watch anybody else have sex again in my life. Did you ever see that Michael Fassbender movie, Shame?" And then she recounted the plot of that movie to me instead.
Okay.
So.
Wild.
So I went to see Bros alone, and I was trying to not laugh to pay attention because the jokes were coming pretty hot and heavy at the beginning. But when they had the Josh character, the hockey player, come out on his Instagram live or whatever and say that he was inspired by his hero Colton Underwood, I made a hideous snort choke sound aloud in the theater. That one got me. And yeah, so other options for, Juan and Samantha, little chocolatier, what do you guys think about Aaron and Bobby? How do you like that matchup?
Wait. Let me say my general thoughts first, which is...
Oh, sorry, Samantha.
Like Juan, I spent months before this movie hearing about how it was the first gay rom-com from a major studio, the first gay rom-com released by a big studio. did you know it was the first gay rom-com released by a big studio? So when I went, it kind of felt like homework, or like I was going to a museum or something. And so like, I really wasn't expecting it to be that good. And then even when I saw the Rotten Tomatoes reviews, I was like, oh, you know, maybe some critics are just like praising the precedent more than they're like praising the film. So I went in with like pretty low expectations. And then I was like, holy shit, this is actually like really funny. And I like that it is kind of a benchmark for like, like, you know, I love the theme of love is not love, because
yes.
Ever since Lin-Manuel Miranda's Grammy speech, every queer person I know, at least, has just been making fun of like that slogan and how like neoliberalizing it is, and how it's just kind of like a soothing balm for like, you know, for like mainstream liberals that like queer people were just like you. And so I love that like this is a movie, Jen, where like even with your mom, you have to kind of be like, well, you know, it's gonna have like group sex scenes like in it, right? You know, like I love that it's kind of like, yeah, how much are you really like down with like queer culture?
I kind of want to chime in about Aaron and Bobby.
Yes, please.
I feel like, okay, I feel like, and I was actually just talking about this yesterday with some friends about how, I mean, there's like, in a lot of relationships, there's like the star and the rock. And I was like, I feel like in some ways it's kind of a good balance. Like Bobby, like he's Bobby, right? He's like really funny and outgoing and says what's on his mind. And then like Aaron's kind of like the rock. He's like kind of like, you know, he's maybe a little boring and has kind of a boring job. But something, there's like a fun, like little balance.
How dare you call the little chocolates boring?
Oh no, the little chocolate parts is fine. I forgot that he changes professions. But you know, in the beginning where he's like, does the will stop or whatever. But yeah, like, I don't know. Like, maybe I'm just like so rom-com pilled where I'm like, oh, it's like they're opposites and like it's going to totally work out and like they balance each other out. And, you know, I kind of bought into it. But I don't know. Also to that point, it's like, since this is like, you know, at the end they did talk about like reassessing and it kind of is open-ended and it feels like, you know, like a win at the end, but it's still kind of like they're not really sure what's going on. So I don't know. It's also hard to feel like, oh my God, we lived happily ever after, when it's like even part of the movie. It's like, I don't know. There's not, the win might just be like finally like Bobby is like entering like adult relationship world and like that's enough of like a happy ending. That's all.
I like that. Yeah. And I don't know. I really haven't. I did not think about this discussion at all beforehand. So you're just getting like the jumbled thoughts straight so they come out of my brain. But I have walked out of the theater in such a good mood, and I did really enjoy their chemistry and their banter as a couple. And frankly, I found that whole that slapping scene in the park where then they start wrestling around and making out on the blanket, like really appealing. I liked them together as a couple. So I hope however long their relationship lasts that Bobby and Aaron are very happy together. Oh, so I guess, yeah. What are we judging as success for their relationship then, for the next 3 months, or just Bobby being inspired to write the song and perform it, you know?
Oh my gosh.
Forever and ever. Well, I mean,
the song.
I don't know. You know, I know that Bobby is like not into doing, you know, wrapping things up with a bow of a cute gay marriage at the end, but I would watch another movie of Bobby planning a wedding easily.
Oh yeah. The thing is, what I was thinking about this after the second time I saw it is like, I do also really like them together. Like I love the moments where you can see that Aaron is into Bobby. Like, I think that the whole time that they're in Provincetown is probably one of my favorite parts of the movie, just like in terms of their relationship. And also the part on the blanket when they're having the picnic, I think that that's very fun. And like when they're in bed together afterwards, I think that those moments are really great. And like, I want them to be in that state of like, let's just do 3 months and reassess for the rest of their lives. And they're just very happy together. I think that it's like, I wanted more of those moments where Aaron, that it felt more like equal. There were just sometimes, especially in the beginning, where it felt like if I were Bobby, I absolutely would have dropped it, because I would have been like, this man is not into me. He does not seem interested. He seems bored by my very existence. And maybe that's just me and like that I'm quick to give up, but I would have been like, fuck you. And then like end credits would have rolled. Like that would have been my vibe. But with that being said, like I really liked how they were together. And I thought that the scene where he's on the, in the Adirondack chair and he tells that whole long thing. And then Aaron is like, do you want another beer? I thought that that was kind of nice. Like not making like this big thing about it, but also showing that he definitely is listening. Like you get those shots back to Aaron where you can see him like very attentively listening and like understanding what Bobby is saying. And like, you don't have to make a big thing about it to show that you have like heard your person. So I really loved that. I think the one thing that I probably would have changed if for some inexplicable reason I was friends with Billy Eichner and I got a preview of the movie and I could have changed any part of the script, is I would have had the big like not apology scene, but like the big grand gesture scene at the end been a bit more mutual, because it just seems like, again, like Aaron was doing kind of the bare minimum and he was just showing up. And then Bobby did like that big like song number that everyone like knew the chords to and everything. And it was a very, very cute song. But I was just like, I feel like Aaron has to prove to me, an audience member not involved in the movie, that he loves Bobby before I can fully get behind this.
I agree. I kind of feel like it was, you know, like, okay, Aaron's like hot. So that's it. You know, it's like, it's kind of like, wow, like you're hot and you're into someone who's like hot in a different way. Oh, that's cool. Like that's so big of you. Like that's enough. And that's sort of like the toxic part of like the cis gay male culture, I think, is kind of like, you know, that whole like image obsessed kind of stereotype kind of thing was like very much in this movie, I think, mm-hmm. even when it tried to like not fall into that trap, you know? But yeah, it almost seemed like this, the fact that he showed up was like more than enough, you know? Because like, he's so hot and hunky, et cetera. So yeah, you're right. I didn't even really think about that. So maybe I'm also part of the problem.
I did though. One of my favorite scenes was the bros scene of the broiest scene of the movie, where Aaron and his recently divorced straight brother are hanging out playing Mortal Kombat together, all sadly and, you know, broken up withly in his apartment, and awkwardly trying to talk to each other about their feelings in between trying to figure out the button combos for fatalities. And that's just such a relatable sibling vibe. Anyway, when Bobby finally relents and responds with the text that just says, hey, what's up, which is the callback to all the Tinder messages throughout the movie. And they get so excited that they're hugging each other and jumping in a circle screaming, hey, what's up? I found that incredibly endearing. So I guess by that point, I wasn't expecting as much from Aaron. He had already won me over with that scene before he ever got there. But can we swerve for a second to consider, in the grand tradition of rom-com protagonists acting in an absolutely unhinged fashion at work, and it somehow just getting folded into the course of events, Oh my God. Can you imagine after Bobby pulled his whole roid rage scene, which I felt was one of the weaker points of the movie personally, but then to come back even after their apology and somehow you're one of the other staff at this work. And he's like, okay, guys, I'm going to need you to stay late today and learn a song in case my ex-boyfriend shows up. Like, how did this happen? How did this come together?
I didn't even think of that.
Truly a hellish workplace.
I like to believe that the dean from Community is just a very kind man who would do anything for his friend, no matter how much shit he gives him at the conference table.
Well, he's a bisexual, of course. Of course.
Did you know I don't know his name right now, Jim Rash maybe, but he has an Oscar. He's a full-on Oscar winning writer. And I love that, like, he just is also casually, like, also like doing little parts like this here and there.
Wait, what did he win an Oscar for? He deserves.
I think he co-wrote The Descendants, maybe.
What? Damn.
Yeah, no, he contains multitudes. And we last saw him on this podcast is what the supervillain's henchmen in the Disney yes. Channel movie
Sky
with
High.
Kurt Russell.
Sky High.
Sky High.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He was talents. The one who had to raise Mary Ellen Winstead from a baby after she was accidentally blown up with her own baby laser. I remember. Incredible. Well, he deserves another award for introducing us to the concept of the animatronic hall of bisexuals in this movie. Truly a place someone should build. I would pay for a ticket to go there.
And look, like, I do hope that people give the movie a shot on streaming, because I think, like, I know some people are averse to Billy Eichner just on principle, or maybe they think his Billy on the Street persona, like, is him and not a character he's playing. But, like, I don't know. I sort of, like, feel for him in the sense that, like, in the modern day attention economy, like, often what you actually, like, want to do, like, your true, like, creative aspiration is not what you have to do to, like, claw your way to the position to be able to do that. And so I sort of, like, feel for this, like, gambit that a lot of people have where it's like, oh, the way that I can get into a position to, like, write a book or write a movie is by, you know, making funny tweets on the internet. And then by the time you do that, like, you're so overexposed that everyone just knee-jerk hates your movie or something like that. You know, like, so when someone comes up through something like Billy on the Street and then gets something like this and then actually, like, fucking delivers something really solid, I, like, want it to do well. Because there's so many examples of the contrary of, like, people getting their shot and then, like, kind of blowing it. Anyway, creative industry rant. But do you know what I mean with that whole, like, dynamic, you know?
Oh, yeah. There seems to be such a limited window to kind of shoot your shot to promote your project for most things anymore. And I don't know. I was just having, like, a little blink of an offline moment there. And then I feel like I was exposed to the movie more via the discourse after it bombed than I was even via the promotion, you know, to start with. And that's such a shame, because this is definitely one of my top favorite movies that I've seen this year, full stop, from any year that I've just happened to watch this year. It's really good. And I would love to see it do well as well.
Yeah, it made me yearn for an offline era. Like, if cultural acceptance for LGBTQ people had reached, like, current precarious levels in, like, 2008, and this movie had come out in theaters, it would be, like, a fucking box office, like, smash, you know? Like,
yeah,
it would be, like, it could be a Knocked Up if in 2008, like, people actually, like, wanted to see gay men on screen, played by gay men.
And I feel for Billy Eichner and his initial response to the whole you know, to the disappointment so much more now. I mean, you know, learning anything from Twitter, you're going to get the most negative spin on it humanly possible. But seeing how much he put into this and, you know, imagining that he's somewhat of a similar personality to the character he portrays in Bobby, of course he's going to be devastated, you know, by this not earning as much as he would have hoped. Like, it sucks.
Yeah.
Anyway, somebody say something cheerful. Let's turn this around, because
I'll say one more thing this movie's that's awesome. Not entirely cheerful. Well, it's not cheerful, but I also feel like this concept of like going to consume content for activism is kind of tiring to me. And I feel like that is one of the things that was maybe done wrong.
That's so depressing.
In the marketing, and I think is just kind of exhausting. And like, I'll say right here, right now, that I enjoyed this movie like leagues more than the one I'm about to mention. But it was that medieval movie with Matt Damon, Adam Driver, and Jodie Comer. I can't remember what it was called, but
The Duel.
There were a lot of people who were like, you have to go see this movie because it's the only one in theaters that's like an original script, X, Y, and Z. And it just made me so exhausted. I'm like, I have to go see a movie that I would definitely not have seen otherwise, because the fate of cinema rests in my little hands. And I didn't even enjoy it. I hated every second of it.
It rests in your $9.75.
Yeah. And I think that...
Oh, God. They really did guilt you into going to see it, Sadie.
Yeah. And I hated every second of it. But the thing is, though, like, I hate this concept of like, I have to go. I don't know. It's hard to describe these things that I'm thinking, but I think that if they had focused more on like the actual very funny elements of this movie, because it was a very funny movie, like, I don't know. I think that some of the marketing it went wrong. And I think especially on social media, it went wrong. And there is no recovering from such a thing. I would actually like to know. Like how Fire Island did, because I know that there was briefly some, like someone being like, I can't remember what it was. Like Billy Eichner said, like, this is the first gay film ever or so. I can't remember what he said. And then someone else was like, Fire Island was this. So I feel like they had kind of similar audiences and also another queer movie made by queer people. And I was thinking about this, like, did it do, I mean, it was on streaming, so the metrics would be different, but I was just interested in thinking, like, did it do better? Because it didn't really market itself in such a way that it was like, seeing this movie is activism, and or this is like the first queer film of X, Y, and Z. Do you know what I'm saying? I would just be interested about that.
I would have watched it immediately if Bros had premiered on streaming, but hauling ass out to the theater is a whole nother consideration.
My understanding is it had a relatively small budget of like $10 million or something anyway. So it's not like a spectacular flop or something like that, where like Universal has like, they're going to miss their revenue targets or something like that because of this movie. That, like, that's my feeling on it. And with something that just went to straight streaming like Fire Island, it's like hard to measure what success looks like. And it's also just like you said, like, Twitter is such this poisonous place where like Billy Eichner makes one maybe slightly an artful comment that people think could be a reference to like streaming gay rom-coms, and all of a sudden people are like, Billy Eichner and Joel Kim Booster need to like cage match MMA style, like, to the death, like, that's clearly what's going on here. And it's like, what? That is not the case. Yeah. They're very different movies, like very different levels. And what they have in common is like gay protagonists. But yeah.
Yeah, it also just seems unfair, like, to pit them against each other. When it's like, this is not the point of either of the movies. It's like there's plenty of other, like, non-queer movies that they could be, like, compared to. And, like, you know, they'll end up being, like, you know, faring better. So I don't know. That's also kind of a little annoying. It's just, like, we're all kind of trying... We're all kind of on the same page. Like, we want good queer content and good queer films. It's like, it's not like, I don't know. Maybe I'm being too, like, peaceful or something, but it just seems like, why? Like, you know, it's frustrating to do that to the movies, you know, to put them against each other.
Yeah. And I think his original point was just like what Bros was aiming for was to be that, like, theatrical event comedy that, like, we don't actually get much of anymore, and what it would mean for, like, true gay representation to, like, actually hit that status. And I feel like people just don't see comedies in theaters anymore. And so, like, yeah. But then people thought it was a slight on Fire Island. And it's like, no, the point is, like, we wish we could, like, turn back the time on Hollywood and then turn forward the time on, like, queer representation and live. I personally would love to live in a magical, like, version of 1999 or something that had movies like Rose.
Oh my God, Samantha. Yes. Okay. Because I was thinking this so much because I was thinking about when I was, I think, I forget when American Pie came out, but I saw that in the theaters with, like, some friends. Like, we got someone to, like, get us in. And it was, like, you know, raunchy comedy, obviously. And it's, like, the first thing I'd seen that was like that. But the whole time, like, as a kid, I was like, oh, I wish it was, like, the guys making out and, like, you know, like, that whole thing. But it was, like, still fun to see it. But I was thinking about, like, if I was a kid or, you know, even just, like, this had come out then, like, how amazing that would have been. Even just seeing, like, going to, like, the theaters with my parents around the time of the marketing of this movie, I would see the poster, like, at, like, a random, like, Edwards, like, in Chino, which is, like, out in the suburbs, and seeing the poster for Bros was, like, I could never imagine this happening, like, when I lived here. You know, it, like, there was something about it that, like, did touch, that did, like, resonate with, like, 12-year-old Juan, where I was like, oh my God, this is kind of major in this way. Even if the movie does well or doesn't do well, like, there's something there. I don't know. There's, like, some sort of, like, wish fulfillment that, mm-hmm. like, kind of happened.
Yeah. To have a time closet so I could turn back time, or some other thing that the dean says in an episode of Community that I can't remember. A time desk. He wishes for a time desk. Anyway.
And I will say...
Yeah, the writing was so good. Go on, Sadie, sorry.
Oh, God, no. I will say what I found really, like, an unforeseen, like, bonus of this movie is, like... And again, like, you're right, like, this concept of, like, I can see a movie like this in theaters with my mom. And, like, you know, like, my mom and I have, like, at times fraught relationship over my queerness. And so it was very, like, interesting to, like, be able to, like she asked me to go see this movie with her. And I was like, yeah, sure. Do I have some regrets? Maybe. In terms of watching people have sex with my mom, like, right next to me. But, like, I was really shocked that she had asked me to go with her to see it. And, like, she, like, didn't hate it. Like, she liked it. So it was really a really great moment for me in that. And I think that just having that opportunity was really fantastic. And, like, definitely it's something that I was never able to do before. Yeah, I mean, it was uncomfortable in moments, but I was like, thank you, Billy Eichner, for doing this. And, like, I could, again, like, yeah, I could see it in, like, this theater that I grew up in, and, like, probably never in a million years thought that I would get to see, like, a queer rom-com there.
Sadie, I thought of you during that scene near the beginning where the grandparents are getting the news over the phone and they're so excited and thrilled because they get the news about their grandchild being in a throuple. That's us whenever a throuple option is floated as the other guy on this podcast.
I don't think in this case we could have a good throuple option. Bobby Lieber strikes me as someone who just wants to be monogamous.
Yeah.
And I can relate as a fellow. Are turtles monogamous? Anyway. But I mean, in that respect, like, I think Fire Island and Bros are interesting companion texts that, like, belong together because one does feature a protagonist who is like, you know what, like, I don't have, like, strong moral judgments about this, but for me, like, this is not my thing. And then I think Fire Island ended with Joel Kim Booster's character being like, yeah, like, I don't want monogamy, but let's, like, hang out and, like, be together. More things than one can exist at the same time. Let a thousand flowers bloom, et cetera, et cetera.
Beautifully said.
I like Aaron's, like, you know, Jordan from The Great Gatsby-esque, like, outlook on, you know, he only does group sex at the beginning because one-on-one is like too, I don't know. You only like go to large parties, you know, so that you can have some privacy.
That
made way more sense in my head than when I spoke it out loud.
One, I had wanted to ask you earlier and maybe everyone, whether since seeing it, you felt like a need to evangelize about it. Because I remember in our conversation, you were like, yeah, I have friends who are like convinced that going to this would be like going to the dentist or something like that.
Yeah. No, totally. I feel like I have been talking about it, like, you know, with any, you know, I have a friend that I was like, oh yeah, I want to go see it. And it's like, oh yeah, I was thinking of seeing it, or I was going to wait till streaming. And I was like, I'm always a supporter of seeing comedies at the movies. Like, I always think it's a theater. I think it's like, I just really love that experience. You know, I think like horror movies and comedies are so fun in theaters. So like, I always push for it. Like, I think people should always just not wait. But yeah, I feel like, you know, even like, friends of mine that aren't queer, I've been like, yeah, it's actually just like a really fun movie. And like, I was surprised and I didn't know, I kind of came in with some expectations and like to not like it or to be super critical of it. And I just like really enjoyed it. So yeah, I do kind of feel like I'm a little bit on the Bros street team. yeah, no, it is true. Like after I felt actually rewatching it would be fun. So if someone wants to go with me, I'll be like, okay, well, I'll take you. Let's go see it together. Cause I think it's worth a rewatch after, especially after talking about it for so much. I feel like I do need, I already need a refresher. So.
Yeah. I feel like I talked about it so much that I like purged it from my brain to the point that I can't remember specific gags beyond the Hall of Bisexuals and Gay Love Letters of Abraham Lincoln. There's like bits and pieces there, but like I find myself wanting to bring up, oh, this part was great, and all I can find is nothingness because I've already like purged it all. I need to go back to the well. I need to reinject the Bros, and fortunately it is like on VOD now. Like they released
it. Oh, it is.
I don't think it's like streaming on Peacock or whatever, but like you can rent it for the obscene price of $20, which I found in COVID era is like, you just wrap your head around that and be like, I would spend way more than this going to a movie theater, you know, between
exactly
concessions.
And you can pause to take your own restroom breaks. You can rewind on it. Oh, I'm so excited to hear that because I will definitely watch it again this weekend if it's out on VOD. I feel, yeah, I don't, my brain is just a smooth glass marble by this point of the week. And even though I feel that I've seen the movie very recently, yeah, there were just so many jokes. It's such a rich text that they've all flown right back out of my head. But I would dearly love to see it again.
I feel like one of the funniest parts of the movie for me was the entirety of Bowen Yang's performance. Like I was in tears at the end when they had the ride of queer trauma, and he's like, "Congratulations, you've reached the Obama administration, but oh no, what's around the corner?" It was funny to me personally.
Juan, and that part made me think of you because you are. I'm going to reveal your shameful secret, or maybe you don't think it's a shameful secret. You're a Disney gay.
Oh my God. I guess I am. I literally took the day off work yesterday to go to freaking Disneyland. I do love a dark ride and a dark ride of gay trauma. I mean, I'm all for it. Let's do it. I love that part. It was so good. It was like the best kind of like SNL sketch or something, like where it was like just done so perfectly. I kind of want to like see the entire like dark ride tour. I want like a YouTube tour of it.
I mean, honestly, instead of doing marketing of just sending Billy Eichner everywhere to be like, this is the first gay rom-com, make a pop-up dark ride in Universal Studios of like the dark ride of queer trauma or something and send a bunch of like gay influencers on it. I don't know.
Samantha, I think you have another career up your sleeve.
As a guerrilla marketer.
Yeah, you'd be great at it.
This episode is You Should See the Other Marketing Strategy with Samantha Alex.
Yeah. More than Jake or Josh or whatever, I feel more strongly of like, yeah, Universal, you should have chosen the other slogan. You should have used a poster where you can see the protagonists' faces. Like, yeah. Dear God.
Oh, I do hate that film poster. Yeah. I do.
The film poster kind of gave me the impression that the movie was going to be about like a fake dating scenario where like one of the partners was closeted or something. Like it was, the poster is not good.
Well, has it come time to rate this movie?
I think it has.
I will rate.
Well, I'm jumping in before anybody else can get there.
Juan, start thinking of an object now.
You know, I'm going to give it the whole haul, 5 or however many more there are of animatronic bisexuals. I enjoyed this movie so much. And I wonder if Abraham Lincoln ever ended up joining the animatronic hall of bisexuals, if Robert won that battle. I don't know. Anyway, this was great. I'm joining the bros proselytizing team. It was awesome. I'm going to see it again. Everybody should see it. 5 out of 5 animatronic bisexuals.
I will give it 5 out of 5 Provincetown slices of pizza. Very crowd pleasing, very fun group activity, just like eating a pizza. I'm sorry, I'm so lame. I loved this movie.
Juan, you go next. I give you the honor.
Oh my gosh, thank you so much. I loved it. I mean, I loved it for so many reasons. I really connected to it. Like, I gotta admit, like, I did connect to it, and it was, you know, I want more queer rom-coms. 5 out of 5 Deborah Messings.
Oh, good scale.
Thank you.
Man, it's perfect. Let's see. I've never been put into this position where everyone else has given 5 out of 5s. Because I'm a stickler in some areas, I'm going to give it 3.75 concave chests out of 5. I thought that the humor was so funny, and I will be rewatching it. Absolutely. I wanted more moments of a growth from Aaron in terms of like, I wanted more of him chasing Bobby earlier on in the movie and also a little bit at the end. So that's purely, so my pull from the stars is just for that respect, but I put a lot of weight into it. But maybe I'll bump it up to 4 because the Hall of Bisexuals really has just stole my heart. So 4 concave chests out of 5 is my final verdict. Great movie.
Yeah, I don't think my 5 is like, this was perfect. And that's never what I mean when I give a 5. There were things that annoyed me, like where it feels like it's trying to check off representational tick boxes, or like we're just like, I could tell that Billy Eichner felt like the weight of the precedent of like, oh, well, I've got to mention Marsha P. Johnson in the first 60 seconds of the movie or else people will cancel me or something like that. I don't know. Like that, those parts of it were like, I can tell that you're feeling pressure and it's affecting the writing. And those were the parts that kind of took me out of the movie, just being like a good, fun movie that just had like a natural diversity to it. Anyway, point being, there are things where the humor of it covers any sins it has, where it's just like, I can't remember the time I like laughed out loud in a movie theater before this. Jen, what gym should people try to cruise for our podcast at?
That scene really, that whole little, setup really got me. I was not the hugest fan of when he, you know, went on a rampage at his workplace on Roid Rage, but oh my God, when Bobby did the deep voice, the hey bro voice. And then that poor man like realized that, oh my God, I've just always wondered that about people who go out and like affect a fake accent while they're meeting people. Like, how is that ever going to go for you? Anyway, if you would like to talk to us in a fake accent, you can find us on Twitter at YSSTOG, or you can send us an email at YSSTOGpodcast@gmail.com. We do not check our email like very often. Sadie, we should probably do that, like at some point in the near future.
Now that you bring it up,
perhaps maybe like just tap us on Twitter and let us know if you ever send us an email. And let's see, we are also on Patreon at patreon.com/YSSTOG, and from there you can join our Discord server and talk to us about animal actors or Mark Brandanowitz or whatever else we talk about on there. Also, I need to check back in on there.
And before we do Patreons, yes, please go ahead, Samantha. I was going to say the same.
I think we are both going to ask Juan where people can find his work, his music, his life, his musings on art, beauty, philosophy.
My Twitter handle is at Juan Vigoda. And that is also my Instagram, where I post photos of me at Disneyland. And you can find some of my writing on them.us. But yeah.
Yay! Okay, shall
I? It's been a delight having you, truly. And tell Wikipedia that your last name is spelled wrong on the Abe Vigoda webpage.
Oh, good to know. Good to know. Thank you for doing the research. Thanks for having me. This was really fun.
Got to correct the legacy. You know?
No, thank you so much for looking out.
Okay. Now I shall read off the names of our lovely, wonderful Patreons very quickly. We love them all so very much. Logan Mayonnaise, Andrew Althea, Xenolon Sharon, Justin Evan, Liz, Brittany, Ace, Mara, Rami the Void, Heartleaf, Ape with Teeth, Hadas, Ryan, Maddie, Abby, Brian, Carolyn, and Brianna. We love you all very much. And we would give you tons of little tiny chocolates if you asked us. Okay.
You will all appear in the animatronic hall of Yeast Dogs.